good evening, and sorry for a bit of a delay. So if I can call the meeting to order, and if I can ask the village clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner?
Here. And Kathy, we're getting some feedback from your mic.
Okay.
Everybody make sure they're...
Maybe just make sure they're off. Or muted. Yep.
You have to be on mute, each of your computers. Okay.
So if you just mute your laptop, I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Let's try again. Okay. So Trustee Bachner is here. Trustee Kharji?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Brennan?
Here.
Trustee Hennick? Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
President Aduce? Here. Okay, if we can please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and from the Republic to which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Okay, well, first of all, is there any citizens' comment? I think we've got one, Margie, right?
There was, yeah, one individual who signed up in advance, and it was Margie Sikander.
Okay. All right, so before I get to Margie, I want to say thank you to Bob and Tom for being in our village board meeting. It's good to see people in the audience as well, so I'm happy to see us get slowly back to normal. All right, so Margie, I think I saw you out there. Yep, there you are. So you didn't tell us what you want to talk about, but I'll go ahead and let you have the floor.
Thank you so much. I wanted to make several different comments on different topics. I want to thank all of the candidates who ran in various village elections this time, this last election, who ran in contested elections. I wanted to thank them for giving voters choices. There were 12 uncontested elections in this village alone, 7 at the township, 4 at the school board, which is the second time in 3 elections for the school board, and the village clerk as well. So I thank all of those who gave us some choices to the voters. I wanted to thank you also for the appointments to the DEI committee. I'm not serving, but 43 members and 2 chairs looks like we're appointed, which it seems to be unwieldy. It's exciting that you have a large group of residents who are interested, and I appreciate that. But I would think at that kind of size, it would be very difficult to get much done. I wanted to talk briefly about the annual budget. Item 9 on the agenda states that the topic is on fiscal year 2021. Is that correct? I thought you wanted to talk about 2022.
I apologize, it should be fiscal year 2022.
Okay. Easy fix. Thank you.
Does that remove the item from the agenda if it was incorrectly stated, or does it stay on?
No, the agenda item is appropriate. A public hearing was held on the correct fiscal year budget, and the board will be able to vote on that tonight.
Okay, thank you. I'll be fairly brief. I noticed the pension contribution in 2022 is up almost $500,000. For 4 years from 2013 to 2022, that's a 9.5% compounded annual growth rate, or about 45% in total, 44%. So that's what Eric Palm mentioned late in calendar 2020 because of a readjustment, but that is a sizable increase that the village will probably continue to fund at an ever-increasing rate. According to Maria Pappas's work online, the village owes $20.6 million. The pension and healthcare amounts are $101.3 million, of which 51% is funded. So there's a shortfall of $49 million owed by our village and our taxpayers to the village pension and healthcare shortage. That's huge. And that's the percentage that's funded is slightly higher than the county and the forest preserve, and substantially lower than the school districts. The alleys that you have in for the budget, 1.85 million, followed by another 2.15 million for the following year, total of 4 million spread over 2 years. In your package, you have an alley rating survey from last fall that lists a total of 9 alleys out of 19, not 18, that are less than good. So 9 alleys that fall in the fair category and 0 poor. So this seems very large. It changes the program that we've been doing of repairing alleys, replacing alleys periodically. It looks like it's used to help. Let me restate that. The $5.4 million bond issuance will largely go to the alleys, the $4 million of alleys. But your own packet doesn't even justify that, because there are only 9 that are fair and 0 poor. We still owe 15 years on the Northside Stormwater Management Project. 15 years at $917,000 a year, we still have to pay off. And the automated metering, which I believe you may have approved, cannot be justified. $1.4 million that you all had in the budget for a Siemens, a no-bid contract from Siemens, cannot justify it based on water operators that start new $50,000 a year plus benefits, and it cannot be based on leakages. So it's not justifiable. Lastly, I would like to comment about the search committee, and I propose that the village initiate a search committee for the Eric Palms replacement, the administrator for the village, and that the chair be someone who did not endorse either presidential candidate in the last election, and that the committee be manageably small, whatever that means, but not a committee of size. It should be nimble and able to deliver recommendations to the board in a sufficient amount of time. Thank you for letting me make comments.
Okay, very good. And thank you for your comments. And they're all very important comments, and I'm very happy and pleased to let you know that we debated all of these, Margie. In fact, I encourage you to go back to the audio and listen to most of this. The pension, very comfortable where we're at with the pension. And I believe Eric Palm basically said, although there was going to be a spike in the pension, unfunded pension, we should see clearly a significant amount of, we think, based on the pension consolidation effort that's going on right now through the IML, there's going to be significant savings for us. So we're very pleased about where we're at. We also have, actuaries that we hire that tell us exactly where we need to be in our pension. So I highly recommend, Marjorie, read that actuary report. I think you'll find it pretty pretty robust. Alleys, again, I'm very pleased. The board, I think, debated that at great length. And we decided to move ahead because of the percentage of the interest rate that is low at this point. So all good. Thank you for your comments, and thank you for catching that mistake on the 2021. We're human, so thank you. All right, so that, I think, concludes that for the citizens' comments. So we'll go ahead and go right to the elected official comments. So Bob, do you want to start?
Am I talking to my computer?
No, you're talking through your mic.
Yep, turn your mic on, and then your computer
is muted.
Thank you. Good evening. It's nice to be here in Village Hall. It's a couple things this evening. First off, I had an opportunity, not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before, to attend the bike exchange program that was held over at Roosevelt. I know that in the latest, one of the latest Village newsletters, President Ducey congratulated the event organizers. But I wanted to take a minute and recognize by name the organizers and all those who worked hard to make it a hugely successful event. First off, to Lindsay Silver, who is the organizer. She did a great job, pulled it together. You know, I don't know who's been out to try to buy a bike lately, but everything you read in the newspaper, since the pandemic hit, bikes are impossible to get. So this was very timely. Damian Silver, Alexis Murphy, Josh Murphy, Renee Sicklow, Michael Sicklow, Laura Bean, Brian Bean, Courtney Foreman, our friends at Buzz Cafe provided coffee, Lisa Gillis, Rick Gillis, Damon Ramirez, and Officer Ben Ransom, who, as the bikes were exchanged, registered bikes, and he did a yeoman's effort of keeping everything under control. I think the number was like 75 bikes or so. So, again, I want to congratulate everybody who participated in that. Other than that, I think that's all I've got for tonight.
Okay, super. Thanks. Okay, Katie?
Kathy, we have a resident who just put something in the chat about confused that she had requested to have a public comment, but she was didn't have an opportunity.
Okay. Give me a minute.
It was Phyllis Rubin.
So Phyllis, you signed up, but somehow we didn't get it. But we're kind here, and we're very nice, and we're small, so we are happy you're here. So go ahead. You can go ahead and talk.
Okay. I'm at two meetings, so I will do this, and then I will go back to my other meeting. Thanks. I didn't sign up at the last minute either, so I don't know what happened to that. Thank you for getting me the information on the Lake and Lathrop building from last Saturday. I think Lisa sent me something on Saturday. Thank you. I did check. Kathy, I heard what you said last time. Like, let's, you know, the building is not out of, you know, hasn't violated the contract yet. I should look on the website. I looked on the website. Indeed, it says 6 units have been sold, 1 pending. It still says that. So that hasn't changed. I now have questions from my building because we're all interested in knowing this information. So assuming the building is finished in November 2021, what would be the deadline for selling the requested number of units, the required number of units? And I don't remember what the required number is, but I know there's a certain percentage of the units have to be sold. Then there's another deadline. The deadline, what would be the deadline for breaking ground if the if it's going to be done in November? One of my neighbors also asked, out of those 6 units that have been sold, how many of them are related or associated in some way with the project? And how many of them are totally new people coming into River Forest? That's an interesting question. Those are my 3 questions related to Lake and Lathrop. And I have one other completely different question, which is, are you planning to issue any block party permits this summer?
Good question. Actually, that's a great question. Thank you, Phyllis. That should be brought up.
Sure. So the last time the board had a discussion about this was at the outset of the pandemic. And the decision at that time was to wait until we had moved into phase 5. Obviously, there have been a lot of changes and transitions and iterations of the Restore Illinois plan. And so I think it would be an appropriate topic for the board to revisit. So at this point, the direction is still to wait for phase 5. As we head towards the bridge from phase 4 to phase 5, it might be appropriate to reassess it relative to the guidelines that the IDPH and the DCEO are recommending relative specifically to outdoor social gatherings. I think right now they're still at 50 people. So I think it would be an appropriate topic for the board to think about as we head towards the summer. But at this point, the direction was phase 5.
Okay. And I know, if I can just add on to Phyllis's comment, I know there's a question about Memorial Day parade. So I don't know if you want to address this now. We can address it later. But
sure. I mean, I'm happy to address it. I've been in contact with the Park District Director. The Memorial Day parade will not be occurring. We're just when we get into these different phases is still a little bit in flux. And public health is obviously still a paramount concern. So in lieu of a Memorial Day parade this year, they're going to be doing a small outdoor ceremony on Memorial Day to recognize those individuals who have served.
Okay. Right. So, Phyllis, your Lake and Lathrop questions we'll get to when we get to Lake and Lathrop. I wrote them down. If you're still in with us at Zoom, please, hopefully at that point in time, we'll answer your questions. Otherwise, I'll go ahead and move on to Trustee Brennan.
Thank you. I have three items. The first is that this month, the village has been delivering finished compost to residents who subscribe to the village's curbside composting program. And as a reminder, this program offers weekly or monthly, depending on the time of year, curbside pickup year-round. The goal is to decrease the amount of organic waste that's sent to the landfill, which thereby decreases methane gas, which is a potent greenhouse gas. It eliminates the need for the use of chemical fertilizer, and it promotes healthier gardens, lawns, trees, and shrub growth. The program has a $20 monthly cost, and subscribers are provided a 64-gallon cart, which is equivalent to the value of 2 yard waste bags, and are also given an under-sink kitchen tote. One of our goals is to enable more villagers to use this program by working with our waste hauler to defray the cost. We'll be renegotiating our waste hauler contract this year, and we'll be talking about ways to do this. I wanted to acknowledge Public Works delivery of the finished compost this month and thank them for doing a good job. John Anderson, I know you sent an email out to subscribers today about the compost delivery. Is there anything you wanted to add as long as we're on the topic?
Sure. Yeah, I sent out an email today because it came to my attention that several people didn't get the initial email. Well, they got the initial email, but I didn't get the responses. So I wanted to send it out again to make sure if you wanted that finished compost, so just give me a call and let me know. We can set up a delivery. We're getting a new load from Strom to deliver. So we're still in the process of doing that.
Okay, great. Then my second item was just to say that I've attended a briefing on the recently passed Illinois Safety Act Criminal Justice Reform Package. The Safety Act stands for Safety, Accountability, Fairness, and Equity Today. There are, I thought I would mention just 10 of the many changes that this act brings in Illinois. Here are 10 of them. First, standardized use of force standards for law enforcement, including a ban on use. If you're not speaking, we ask people to mute their phones and computers because it's hard to hear.
Okay, we don't hear that, but thanks, Katie. If people can, because we don't hear the feedback for some reason. So if I can ask everyone to just mute your phone, please. There's several of you that still have your phone non-muted.
Okay, so including a ban on use of chokeholds and a prohibition on restraint above the shoulders with risk of asphyxiation unless force is justified. The second change that this act brings is requirement that police departments submit use of force information to a centralized FBI database. Better police training and accountability, crisis intervention, better mental health screening for officers, or protections, changes to how courts impose bail, a deflection program for substance abuse treatment as an alternative to traditional criminal justice and emergency room admissions, and clarification of citizen rights with regard to interactions with police, including the right to have 3 telephone calls as soon possible upon being taken into police custody and not later than 3 hours after arriving in custody and more. So this act is effective immediately, although many of the provisions are going to be phased in incrementally. For example, the body camera provision will be mandatory statewide by 2025, while the abolition of cash bail takes effect in January 2023. And the last thing I just wanted to mention, and this might be, the Safety Act might actually be covered by this, by Chief O'Shea in this, but I wanted to mention that the quarterly community meeting is this Wednesday, the 28th of April at 6 p.m. And this will be by Zoom link, which is accessible by the village website. If you go to the calendar and you click on April 28th, you'll get the link there. Recorded still, and so if you want to attend but you have a conflict and you want to still hear it, you can later go to that same link on the village calendar, April 28th, and you'll be able to hear the recording. Do I have it right, Chief O'Shea?
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, you do. Everything you've said is correct. And just one thing I wanted to mention, I believe July 1st of 2021 coming up is when the first segments of the bill become law and are active.
Right.
Not if you had mentioned immediately, it is July 1st.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
And we will cover some of those tenants at the up and coming meeting that you just promoted. And I appreciate that.
Perfect. Thanks, that's all I have.
Yeah, very good. And let me add, always, we will always have all this information and plenty of time on the e-newsletter and on the website and on Facebook and Instagram and all the social media that we put out. So you'll hear all about the criminal justice bill. We actually had that posted at one point in time, and we'll continue to post it because it was a significant legislation that was signed by Governor Pritzker, I think, a couple months ago. So we'll go ahead and run it again, but it was on our website, and I'm sure many residents reviewed that. So it's always a good good way to remind people. And then, of course, the quarterly safety meetings will also always be on Facebook, social media, all social media outlets, and e-newsletter. So good stuff. Okay. So, Kathleen?
Nothing for me tonight.
No. Okay. Very good. Rev, Trustee Vasquez?
Yes. Thank you. I have four quick items. First, a friendly reminder to everyone, as well as a strong encouragement for individuals who have yet to be vaccinated, whether it's the first shot, second shot. We are now at the, So we are now at the stage of where the government is accepting walk-in appointments for vaccines. So I will encourage everyone, if you haven't had one or the other or both, you can go like to Triton Forest Park. There are plenty of sites that you can go and get your vaccine, so please do that. Second, I want to just give a kudos to our River Forest Police Department, and in particular Office Ben Ransom. He on April the 15th, he did a nice presentation regarding scam and fraud protection and gave the public some great tips on how to protect themselves. Although obviously it was helpful to our seniors, but it was open to anybody. So it was a great presentation. Also kudos, I always appreciate when our respective public bodies work together in collaboration. And in this case, with this presentation, the River Forest Public Library and the River Forest Township worked with our River Forest Police Department in that presentation. So great for everybody. I also want to say that on April the 23rd, I did attend the our Oak Park River Forest Chamber of Commerce is doing invites to our commercial businesses, whether River Forest and Oak Park. On the 23rd, it was to promote and sponsor a Good Earth Greenhouse and Cafe. I was there, and it was great to see people who were there. And it's actually great just to be out, and seeing this. So I encourage that for everybody. Last but not least, since I believe that our next meeting is going to be on May the 10th, I'm going to wish all our mothers in River Forest and all over the world a happy Mother's Day. That's it. Thank you all.
Okay, thank you very much, Rev. Okay, Trustee Kerji?
Well, I gotta go with the Happy Mother's Day thing now, too. But other than that, I have nothing. Happy Mother's Day.
Oh. All right, thank you, Tom. Trustee Bachner.
Thanks. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwe, the Chippewa, the Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. So thank you for the Mother's Day shout outs to Rez and Tom. Very nice of you. I'm grateful for that bike exchange. I think in our family, we have one more year until we'll be heading over there to switch out our kiddo's bike. Wanted to just say how much fun I and Lisa Shiner had representing River Forest at Maywood's Village Pride, village-wide kickoff event that had beautification across Maywood and helping pick up trash and things at various sites. It was a great way to connect with representatives in Maywood and to connect with the community there and just share experiences and do a little cleanup. I believe United Methodist Church was there as well and had a contingency of about 30 people. So just really gratified that people are taking the Twin Village Covenant and thinking about ways that they can connect with the community of Maywood. Speaking of picking up trash, I've heard from a number of residents who through this pandemic have started going on long walks to get out of the house around the village. And they recognize that if they take a trash bag with them, they often are filling up an entire trash bag as they go walking. So on behalf of Earth Day, you know, this might be something if you are an avid walker around town, that you might consider doing. I think a lot of people have fun with the little picker-upper sticks and putting that in the trash bag as they're walking. So that is an idea for everybody. And I think that's it for my comments.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Erica. I don't have much. I wish I was were able to go to the Maywood Pride. Unfortunately, I injured my leg this week and I have been out most of the week, and unfortunately, I'll probably be out for several weeks trying to heal my calf. I was supposed to go down to Springfield this past week. The Illinois Municipal League had a conference for their board of directors, which was a small group of people, and lobby day. Again, very small group of people. Unfortunately, I was unable to make it, but I do want to tell the people of River Forest just how much your administration, led by Lisa Shiner, and our village attorney and others that work day in and day out on our behalf, trying to find funding and grants and key money from the state and federal government that helps us balance the budget. I know we criticize the budget here and there, which of course is, I guess, the right of all residents, but the budget is balanced on really a lot of hard work that those in the staff, again, led by Lisa and Rosie, work really hard. But the key is the money that you often don't see or compliment them on because, you know, you don't see it. And it's a lot of work to get legislators and the governor's office and even the president's office in the United States to grant us funds. And that is significant and it helps us balance our budget as well. So I want to just shout out on that. I'll do that at the budget time, but I know Lisa is working overtime on key funding items. See, other than that, I have nothing more to report other than Happy Mother's Day, but we'll make sure we get an e-newsletter out to everybody indicating that. Okay, with that, then I am going to move it to the consent agenda. So if I can get a motion and a second to move item 5A to zero.
Can we pull 5B, please?
Okay.
And I'd like to pull 5J, please.
J. Okay.
So I move that we approve the consent agenda items A, and then K through O.
Okay. Do I hear a second? Second. Okay. Any questions regarding those consent items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read out the consent items and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, committee of the whole meeting minutes, April 12, 2021. C, award of bid and contract for partial village hall roof replacement to Garland DBS Inc. in the amount of $45,403. D, award of bid and contract for the 2021 sewer lining project to Benchmark Construction in the amount of $163,054. E, award of bid and contract for the 2021 street improvement program to Brothers Asphalt Paving in the amount of $585,179.54. F, waiver of formal bid due to competitive RFP and award of contractor for construction engineering services for the 2021 street improvement project and alley improvement project with Thomas Engineering Group and a not to exceed cost of $90,729.60. G, appropriation of $550,000 in motor fuel tax funds for the 2021 IDOT maintenance agreement resolution. H, 2021 compensation plan approval ordinance. I, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 847 Thatcher Avenue. K, sexual assault awareness month proclamation. L, Mental Health Awareness Month Proclamation. M, Arbor Day Proclamation. N, March Financial Report. O, Village Administrator's Report. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Kargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell's
yes.
Motion passed. Okay, very good. Okay, so then we'll take 5B. This is the Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes on April 12, 2021. If I need a motion and second, we'll discuss it.
I move to approve the Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes April the 12th, 2021.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Okay, Katie.
Yes, I just had one small change to the minutes, and that was in the elected official comments, my comments actually. It was a small clarification that in my trustee comments at the last meeting, as the notes, the minutes currently say, I did ask that we receive an update on Lake and Lathrop at the next Village Board meeting. But I had also asked that we received a written report on Lake and Lathrop within one week of that last meeting, and which would be one week prior to this meeting. And that was not included in the minutes of last meeting. I wanted to be sure that it was changed to reflect that.
We'll be at the next energy source. Okay. So I don't, are you okay with that? I mean, I guess, okay.
If Trustee Vasquez is willing to amend his motion for approval to include that additional text, and then Trustee Brennan seconds it, then it could be added to the minutes as approved.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm, yes, I will amend my motion.
Okay.
And I will second the new motion.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
And so,
Trustee Kargi,
you might want to read it and then
you want to read it again. Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, April 12, 2021. Okay, Trustee Kargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Motion passed. Okay. If I get a motion and a second on 5J, the right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement.
I'd like to make a motion for the right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 755 William Street.
Okay, do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Bob?
So this might be in the small points department. When I was reading the right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for the 847 Thatcher. That application was signed by the homeowner. On 755 William Street, the application was signed and the agreement was signed by the president of the irrigation company. Mm-hmm. And so I was just wondering, are they one and the same? Are they property owner? And aren't we making these agreements with homeowners as opposed to companies?
Yes, correct. So the agreements are with the property owner. If there's an agent authorized to act on their behalf, they are able to submit this on their behalf. If you'd feel more comfortable, we can request something in writing from the property owner, you know, perhaps in addition to any permit that they filed. So a permit has to be filed as well for these systems with the consent of the property owner. So.
Yeah, for sake of consistency, I think I'd like to see that as opposed to contractors coming in and filling things out. I mean, I want to be able to go back to the homeowner if there's a problem.
So. Right, and the document does allow for recourse against the owner, but if you're suggesting that staff only bring forward agreements signed by owner, we can do that. We just need to modify the forms and work to require that the owner sign on the line as opposed to an authorized agent, which is the way that the forms currently allow.
Okay, if we could do that, I think, you know, it might save us some problems later on down the line.
Yeah, I agree with Bob. I think that makes sense because if we continue to let the sprinkler guys do it, could be the owners don't even know that they're incurring potential exposure because the guy may just be doing it as a matter of form. So I do think we get the owners to sign.
Understood.
We can do that. Sure.
Yep.
So do you want to pull this off or you? Okay. You okay? You just wanted to send. Okay.
Sure. So the document, the agreement that's being signed represents that the contractor has the permission of the owner and that the owner is agreeing to be bound. And so the village relies on that when it approves this agreement. The agreement's recorded on title. It's a matter of record. The village has remedies under it. So I'm comfortable with approval of this item because it's I think that the village has all the remedies it needs. Going forward, we can fix this. If the village's board is more comfortable with only having the legal owner sign, we can change the form and have that be the case going forward. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm fine with, you know, moving this forward and then changing the form at a later date.
But just to be sure, just to be safe, I think maybe we should get the owners to acknowledge that this was submitted on their behalf.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, that's fine. And I can work with staff on that. That wouldn't have to hold up approval of this matter. If you wanted to vote to approve it tonight, then staff can get a written acknowledgement from the owner in this case that, you know, she agrees to be bound.
Yeah. And that may already exist. But I can go back and confirm that with the permit clerk. Okay. So, okay.
Item J, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 755 William Street. Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Kargi.
Yes.
Motion passed. All right, very good. Okay, thank you. We have no consent items for separate consideration, so we're going to move on to the recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. We have a Zoning Board of Appeals, so I need a motion to approve this ordinance. So if I can get a trustee to move in second, and we can discuss it.
I move to approve an ordinance granting the requested variation to section 10-9-7 of the zoning ordinance at 7612 Vine Street.
Second.
Okay. So, yeah, sure. Yeah. So the property owners at 7612 Vine Street have requested a variation to the village's regulations that restrict the height increasing the height of a building with a non-conforming side yard setback and constructing a roof eave that encroaches into the side yard setback. The property owners seek to construct an addition on the second story of their home to increase the size of the home. Their architect is here with us tonight, Mark Zinni, and I believe the applicants are present on the Zoom call if anybody has any questions. The ZBA held a public hearing in February and adopted their findings of fact in March, wherein they unanimously recommended by a vote of 5-0 in favor of recommending that the Village Board of Trustees grant the requested variation. Earlier today, just as an FYI, since the board packet was distributed, the village has received an email from a property owner at 117 Ashland, Mr. Ron Tupin, in support of the requested variation. So the recommendation before you tonight is presented for final action by the Board of Trustees with a recommendation that the variations be granted to the property owners. Okay. Any questions from the trustees regarding this variance? Okay. Then hearing none, I'd like to have the clerk please take the vote. Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Motion passed. Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on to item 7B, if I can get a trustee and a second to approve the amended resolution establishing a diversity, equity, and inclusion ad hoc advisory group.
I'd like to make a motion to approve an amended resolution establishing a diversity, equity, and inclusion ad hoc advisory group.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Okay, this is pretty much intact the way we discussed it a month ago, I believe, or the last time we discussed it. We are adding all 44 applicants. One person needed to drop out due to work obligations and already knew that that was going to be a conflict. So we filled in with 43 members, and we'll vote on those in a second, in our second motion. The other change is because it is a fairly large group, in addition to Lisa Shiner as the administration chair, and of course Erica Bachner, which we'll vote on as a chair, as a trustee chair, I am also recommending a second trustee chair. I'm amending the asking for amendment of that in membership as well as under the chair item B. My recommendations, and let me just give you would be when we have the new board seated, to ask Ken Johnson to take on the second trustee chairmanship. Obviously, if you don't know Ken, please get to know him. He will be our new trustee on May 10th. Second, one of the bigger reasons is we've learned a lot of things. As you all know, during some of the committee meetings that we've had, especially the Deer Committee, and where we had two chairs, one dropped, and of course, Tom Cargi followed through on the work that had to be done. Unfortunately, his term is of course terminated here at the end of May, and therefore the Deer Committee doesn't have any chairmen. One thing I've learned is I think it's best that we have, of course, the size of a group should certainly need two trustees managing it, but more importantly, they should not be coterminous. In other words, the terms of the two trustees should not end at the same time. That's not to say that the trustee won't run and win again or whatever it might be, but it's just more or less, you know, a good way to ensure, one, that the advisory group continues and the institutional knowledge continues. So that is why I recommend Ken Johnson. So those are the two changes in this amendment. Any questions? Okay, hearing none, then I'd ask the clerk to take the vote on the amendments of this.
Hi, Kathy. I'm so sorry. I was fumbling with my mute button.
No worries.
I did want to just make a comment here and then pose a question as well. So I do want to say that I am truly just so humbled that this many people want to join me in the village and learning about how our current village systems are structured and how they can be more equitable for all, especially those who have been minoritized and who are not always at the table when consideration is given to policies and processes. At the heart of it, this group will be involved in making sure we get closer to more people gaining access to resources, looking at where power lies and where it can be shifted when needed, and that we are all seen. Throughout the applications I read of those who fight for equity every day because they need to for their families, about those who are often overlooked in government, and those who know that we as a community need to make a change and are eager to learn and to be involved in moving our town forward. This group of people are rising to the moment and the challenge of what it can mean to be equitable in rural forest, to consider not just the dominant narrative of how things should be. And this really fills me with pride. This is something that I've been interested in ever since I ran for trustee. So I'm really excited about this. I do want to acknowledge and thank Trustee Kay Brennan, this was her initial idea and put it forth to the trustee board last June, and who has worked with me endlessly over the course of the last year to create the vision for this. In our resolution tonight, there is an edit to have co-chairs number be changed from 2 to 3, presumably, as Kathy mentioned, because of the size of the group. I was planning for this group to likely be the size when we put out the application. I do have a number of years of experience of working with groups this size to enact change. So I am confident that we will be able to do that. I would like to propose that we do consider having a co-chair of this group also be one of the resident applicants. From those who applied, who showed that they have high expertise in DEI work and lived experience to share. There are a couple of names that come to mind from the applicant groups. One is David Bonner, another one is Jessica Hartshorn, both who have shared extensive DEI experience and who know what it's like to be a minority and Black in rural forest and America. So I do pose that to the board and see if there is interest in having a resident. They do believe it does make sense to have that shared power in this group.
Just a couple points I'd like to make. I agree. I think Katie has been an instrumental piece of this whole advisory group development, and I see Katie is continue to be instrumental in all of this. Again, I always say to all of our trustees and all of our residents, you're all welcome to these meetings. They are not excluded at all. They're hopefully included everyone that wants to attend the meetings and want to participate in the meetings. And Katie has graciously accepted being a liaison between the board and Dominican, because that's a lot of work ahead of us on Dominican. So I'm very happy and pleased that that will all work. I mean, we've got lots of work ahead of us. As far as the resident, I consider Ken Johnson a resident too. So I think it's best that my opinion is it's best that we have that extra trustee there for institutional knowledge as this thing moves through the years. So I still believe it should be a trustee.
And I can tell you from my experience on the DEER committee that I think it's important that the chair or chairs be accountable to the electorate. I mean, Ken was elected by the people, and I think that he should share in the role of leading this committee, given that he has that status.
And this is not presuming that we don't have another trustee be a co-chair, but I do think that because it is a larger group, since we've been reviewing this, it has always sort of, for me, has made sense to have that. And I didn't bring it up before, but I am bringing it up now just because there was the number switch. I do think it could be effective. And again, both of the people that I mentioned do have a lot of expertise, and I think could be helpful to me and whoever the other coaches are.
Yeah. Again.
Oh, hello? Oh.
Hello? Okay, go ahead. Is that you, Rev?
Yes, yep. It's me. I was just going to chime in. So far, I do agree that first of all, I'm really excited and happy that we have 43 people that are interested in this committee. Believe you me, and I know, Erica, you know this, and Katie, there's a lot of work to be done. So I do like the idea of the co-chairs being two board members and they alternate possibly. Alternate for historical purpose. We do that now with our board of trustees. Three of us get elected every other 2 years or something. So the history is important to carry. Not that, again, none of us are not going to be reelected, but that's important to have. But the other thing, though, I wanted to emphasize is Katie, I'm sorry, Erica, the point you raised about the individuals you're thinking of, I think that once you get in the committee, you're going to have subcommittees who are going to be working on specific issues as you choose or as the committee chooses should be focused on. I think each of those subcommittees are going to probably have a sub leader, whatever you want to call the person, and it's going to be in charge. And you're specifically highlighting a particular area that you want or would think these two individuals would be great at leading. And I think they can serve that in that capacity. But I do think that the co-chairs ought to be a board members who were elected and are accountable to the River Forest residents. So with that, I just don't want to discourage the fact that if we do appoint another board of trustee as the other co-chair, that does not mean that the work of each of the other 43 members are not going to be respected, not going to be heard upon, and will each have their own skills to bring to the table. And how you guys in the committee decide how that will break out in terms of the issues that you want to approach will be something for all of you to decide. So I just wanted to say that for that. So.
And that was pretty much the experience of the DEER committee. We ended up breaking up organizationally into three subcommittees, and then each of the subcommittees chose their own chairs, which to me makes sense. I think I'm not sure what the addition of additional co-chairs. I mean, I think it's going to be hard enough dragging, organizing this. I think the more head you have, the harder the decision-making process becomes. So I don't see the advantage of adding to co-chairs of the committee when you'll necessarily have subcommittees that will need their input.
So is Erica still on?
I am, and I apologize. I'm really having bad internet connectivity issues, so I'm getting parts of it.
Okay, I just saw a note in the chat from you.
So okay,
I wanted to just thank Erica for the kind words and Kathy as well. It has been my goal since June that this advisory group get up and going and have a mantle to look into important issues for change. And so this is an important vote that we're doing today. And I have confidence in Erica's ability to lead this based on the work that we've done between June and now. It is a much larger group than was anticipated initially. And I think larger than any other commission or committee we've had, I know, including the DEER committee. And I did take to heart the comments of one of the residents who spoke during public comment that she thought it did seem unwieldy to have 43 members. It could be difficult to get work done. I guess proves to be seen. I have, confidence that everyone's going to be aiming towards the same goal and that we've got good leadership here. We should keep our minds open to the idea of one of the residents having a leadership role, particularly because of the Open Meetings Act. I don't actually ever had two trustees lead a committee or commission together. There was the plan to do that for DEER. It never happened. I think maybe there was one meeting. So it's going to be tricky and challenging, and I think it would be helpful to have a resident in a leadership position as well. And I've seen from the work that we've done up till now that we have some really excellent residents with so much to give and so much experience, including leadership
experience. I guess I have a question. How does the
Hang on. I'm sorry.
Bob, let's Bob go first.
Go ahead, Rez.
Rez, okay.
Go ahead, Rez.
Okay. Now, Katie, I just wanted to ask a question about the Open Meetings Act. How does that trigger? Because as I understand it, all the members, it's going to apply to all the members of the committee, the 43 plus the co-chairs. So whether you're a co-chair or an advisory committee right. member, you're still going to be considered as the count towards Open Meetings Act. At least that's how I was told, and that's how I'm running my committee. So I'm looking at that. So
go ahead.
Yeah, that's correct.
I'll let Greg. It's very correct. So I'll let Greg go ahead.
That's right. The resolution creating the committee specifically states that they're subject to the Open Meetings Act, which they are by virtue of the way that the statute is written. So all of the committee's work will have to comply with the Open Meetings Act, including any subsidiary bodies that they create with amongst themselves will have to comply. They'll have to post agendas, meet minutes, and so on. So
thanks. I haven't been thinking about that. You're right.
So I when I first saw the list, I was like, wow. But then the second part of it, when I thought a little bit further about it, you know, it's going to be all about the management. But a group this size, executed properly, is going to let this committee move quicker through the process as opposed to dragging it out for years and years and years and years. And so I think actually, again, with the three chairs done properly, I think they're going to cover a lot of territory in a shorter period of time than they would with a smaller group. So again, I'm on board with the three chairs and then, you know, go at it, because I think, you know, having a big group and subcommittees and everything is going to get us to some answers quicker. So good luck with this.
Yeah.
And I will say, I don't know what the number was, but so I might have be the only trustee with the census committee who had quite a large committee there as well and was able to get the benefit of the residents and the work done there. I do want to make sure that there aren't expectations here. This work will still take years.
Yeah.
There is a lot of learning and a lot of growth that we will all be doing, and a lot of research. It's going to be work. And so I don't want people to think because there are more people that it will be necessarily faster. But it does mean that we have the ability to tackle a few different things at once.
And Kathy, if I may just add, Erica, I totally agree with exactly with what you just said. It is going to be a lot of work. I have faith you're going to do it too. And I just remember the items that were on the list I forgot how you labeled the mission, the goals, et cetera, of the advisory group. There were a lot of items on there. So I anticipate that you're going to all break up into, and maybe, you know, you guys decide. I'm not saying you have to make a subcommittee for each issue, but you might break them up in a little, and you might prioritize some versus others. I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I think you guys are going to do a good job.
Yeah, I am too. I'm really psyched about it. I think it's fascinating. It's going to be great. And I'm really happy about the 43 residents. I think it's going to be great. All right, so I'm not hearing any further comments regarding the amendment.
Kathy, just a home, I guess, homework question. Or do you want one combined motion or do you want two separate motions? Because
we're going to do two. Well, I'd like to read the names of the people in the second motion.
Okay.
So we have one right now just on the resolution. Red.
Okay. Then, okay. But we already moved on that one, correct?
Yes, we did. We're going to take the vote right now.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, all right. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Motion passed. Great. All right, thank you so much. Good stuff. So on to 7C, and this is a motion to appoint those that are listed, and I'd be happy to read them in the record or do you want it, clerk?
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right.
So I just got to get a motion and a second, and then we'll read the name.
Okay, I move to concur with the recommendation of the village president to appoint those listed on the agenda to the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Ad Hoc Advisory Group.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you. All right, yes, please. Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Advisory Group. Erica Bachner, co-chairperson. Lisa Shiner, co-chairperson. Members Duetri Adi, Guillermo Arauz, Stacy Austin, Tina Baird, David Bonner, Tim Brandhorst, Laurel Burkett, Mindy Creedy, Alexandra DeSorbo Quinn, Renee Duba Clancy, James Norman, Holly Economos, Chuck Foster, Doug Garcia Luce, Cecilia Graham, John Grant, Jessica Hartshorn, Anya Herman, Jessica Iverson, Kirk Johnson, Stephanie Kang, Megan Cascatalo, Farzad Paladon, Kent Kirk, Brett Kreisman, Susan Lucci, Susan McCauley, Rosie McAdams, Claudia Moreno, Robert Navarro, Nancy Nicholas, Sharon Oates, Christina Pepernick, Teresa Peavy, Roshni Ray, Anthony Riley, Abigail Rogers, Cindy Shea, Liz Simon, Dorota Sherjanovich Olweni, Richard Schumacher, Glenn Weissenberger, Sun Hee Yoon.
Do you do graduation?
So how many times do you practice that, those
that
names
was
before
awesome.
The meeting?
Thank you.
Kathy, I have a quick question before we do the roll call, because it just occurred to me that one of the is the wife of one of the village board trustees.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, Holly, and we talked about that. I'll let Greg address it.
Yeah, there's no problem. There's no impediment under state law or local ordinance from a spouse of an elected official from serving on an advisory committee. It's up to the President Ducey brings forward the names. If the board gives advice and consent, then the person serves.
Yep, and I assume that's true for Rosie McAdams.
Correct, who is the daughter of a village employee.
There you go.
I guess I just to clarify, it wasn't whether or not that person could serve, it was whether Bob should be voting.
Correct. When there are common law conflicts of interest that arise, the trustee has to decide if they can be fair and impartial. Typically it wouldn't be a problem in a situation like this to vote for someone on an advisory committee, but it's up to the trustee to decide if they want to abstain or if they want to cast a vote.
Yeah.
And I would point out we're asking Erica to vote for herself as well.
Yeah. I don't see it as a, I mean, there's no financial gain then, probably.
Correct. These are uncompensated positions, and there's certainly nothing illegal about it. It's just, in these cases, you typically see elected officials casting votes, including when their spouses are put up to serve on volunteer committees to help.
And their advisory, so.
And their advisory.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, Katie. Okay, any further questions on the appointees, which I'm really, really proud of. All right, hearing none, I would go ahead and ask the clerk to please take that vote. Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
I'll abstain.
Trustee Bachner.
No, I don't know whether I should. I'll abstain.
President Aducey.
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4, motion passed. Okay. Okay. Very good. Thank you. All right. So we're on to the 8A, which is an update. So there's no action required here. So I want to remind the residents that this is a update. It was supposed to happen last time, did not for, reasons, again, explained last time we met. But today we are happy to have the Lake and Lathrop group. I will let them introduce themselves to you. They do have a presentation, I believe. And then I promised Phyllis that we'll get to her questions. And then, of course, the trustees will have their questions. So we'll get to that at the end of the presentation.
Okay, let's make sure technology is working here. good. First, I want to thank the community of River Forest for welcoming Sedgwick into this excellent community, as well as the board for welcoming us in to give a update presentation on our project here in River Forest at the corner of Lake and Lathrop.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay. We're just trying technology. No, well, no. While he's doing that, my name is Jay Feely with Sedgwick Properties Development. I'm going to be giving an introduction overview to the project this evening. We have members of our team here as well. Mark McKinney, who's the Director of Operations for Sedgwick Properties, will be walking through part of the presentation as well. And then we have members of our sales and marketing team. Corey Roberson from Jamison Sotheby's International is here. And Dan Tosk with MidAmerica Real Estate, who represents us on the retail portion of the development, is joining us via Zoom. So there's going to be a couple different faces and a couple different people talking, but hopefully we can give a comprehensive update and overview and answer questions that may come with that as well.
Okay, is there any other Sedgwick employees in Zoom here? Just make sure.
I don't know who's on okay. Zoom, so right. I couldn't tell you.
All right, no worries.
And we do have Kyle Hayes with us here as well. He's with Sedgwick, and he's the one who put the presentation together, but he will not be speaking tonight. So I thought we'd start with just a kind of a general overview of the project itself, because we're very excited to bring together a few different pieces into River Forest. We do a lot of development in the city of Chicago, and most recently in Old Town and River North. And part of the reason that we were doing development in those particular neighborhoods is we consider those Class A neighborhoods, and we align that with River Forest much the same way. A Class A community with great residents, very active in the community, a Class A development, which is what we wanted to bring to River Forest, and Class A living, specifically a for sale housing development. I might have to do something if I can't see. So part of the vision when I talk about a Class A development is really bringing something unique, not only unique in the sense that new construction in a particular community, but also on a greater scale relative to the amenities that are brought to bear in 2021 for Class A developments. Now, we have the advantage of doing extensive market research, as well as having a project currently that is under construction in the city that is also a very high-end Class A development, where we're able to look at what are the different amenities that appeal to people that would be moving into our for sale housing. And for this project, we really wanted to bring the best attributes of, frankly, every development that we looked at citywide, suburban-wide, to try and bring it all together into one development and one living space for new residents. And to highlight a few of these, we felt it was very important that every resident could have direct elevator access into their living space. That is a unique feature, frankly, that you're still not even seeing in the city that much. And for ease of access into the unit, as well as convenience, direct elevator access is a real highlight to this development. Another thing that we highlight is the volume, the overall volume to the individual units that people will call home. And in order to do that, we have 10-foot ceilings that create additional volume. And frankly, anything that was built in the last cycle generally doesn't have that much volume. And so we wanted to bring that into this community as well. A third amenity to highlight is the extensive, expansive indoor and outdoor living. Everybody's familiar with condo buildings that have decks, whether it be a enclosed deck or a metal deck off the rear. One of the things that we've really researched and wanted to bring into the community was something much, much grander than that. And so what we really want to invest in was what we call outdoor living rooms, where it's not just a place that you put a grill and a couple chairs and that's your outdoor experience. These are much like people who live in the suburbs and they have outdoor space where they can entertain, they can put furniture, of course they're grilling, but make that an extension of their interior space. We want to bring that into the condo environment, and that's how this has been designed as well. Of course, luxury finishes. We wanted to go with top-end product and top-end finishes. We also believe that with this building, that you really have sort of a 360 view opportunity. So it's a beautiful community. The people who are residents here will be able to experience that directly from their living space. And then also something that I think is somewhat unique, but 2-to-1 parking for every unit, because we know that a lot of people who move into these types of condos are generally coming from a single family home, and they might have more than one car, so we wanted to be able to accommodate that as well. So we took a very phased approach to this, of course, and this is starting to get in a little bit into the development itself. First thing, of course, was to assemble the land and put all the pieces together. One of the properties was a dry cleaner at one point, and with that comes a significant amount of remediation, which facilitated phase two, which is, I'm happy to say that all the remediation work on site has been completed. And we now have a property that is clean as it relates to the work that was done. There's still some technical stuff that's getting done with the IEPA, but the work is done and we're progressing forward. And that brings us into the next phase, which will be the vertical construction phase. And I'm gonna transition over to Mark McKinney, Director of Operations from Sedgwick, in just a moment, but just to set forth sort of some of the things that topics that he's gonna be working through. Certainly the project milestones that we've achieved to date and that we're excited about, the next phases of construction, and then of course the update on the retail and residential market and specifically this project. So Mark.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Jay. So as Jay said, we're going to just touch briefly on the milestones that we've accomplished here to date. He talked about the land acquisition, but I think more recently in people's mind are the demolition, ComEd relocation, which is one of three utilities needing to be removed from the site, and then remediation. Won't go into a whole lot of detail, but just will touch on them briefly. I do want to note that on the demolition, two sort of key things that played into that part of the process. One, which is not noted here, is we had a very challenging tenant, and we were required to kind of do the demolition in two different phases as we worked to get one tenant off the site. And the other is that the materials on the site went through a recycle program, a state-approved recycle program, which was, you know, great to be able to accomplish. On the ComEd side, seems simple enough. You have some wires running across the site, but anything but simple in getting it off of there. Again, that was running across our site to feed other properties beyond our site. They had to get relocated. They couldn't be on our site. Our development is property line to property line. They couldn't go underground underneath our property, so they had to reroute all the way around the block. They had their own sort of challenges through various times during their work, they had to take crews off onto other emergencies, and it just played into a very slow process in working with ComEd, but fortunately today that is complete. On the remediation side, again, that's one of the more important items for many people to be aware of. The site is now clean in the eyes of the IEPA. The site has been treated. And I'll go to the next slide if I do that right. And this slide just generally overviews the variety of steps and phases that we had to go through for the remediation. One exception I would note is the last item lower right is actually a final step. That is not behind us. That has to do with getting the NFR letter, which does not come until the site is the building is actually in place. So the site is clean enough as defined by IEPA to do construction, but to get the ultimate NFR letter, it's a combination of our concrete slab and a venting system, depending on the locations on the site, that ultimately allow any gases that still may come out of that site to be managed and vented out through the building. That comes at a later date. So that is the work that is behind us, and now we're sort of looking forward to what comes next. We did have the opportunity to get a piece of equipment on site recently. That was mostly to get some of our new staff familiar with the condition that we have against our west neighbor. We're not sure whether it's a footing that is bonded to their footing or whether it's a footing that's an extension of their footing, but we do have a piece of a footing that does extend past our property line. It will be a sensitive issue that we'll need to work through in construction, and we had an opportunity to take a closer look at that. So that was why that was on site and somewhat of a precursor to excavation that's forthcoming. We are in the midst of a building permit. There are three open items related to that. One of them that was becoming critical path is probably coming second to the critical path. And by critical path, I mean you have to get that item done before you can really go to the next stage. So of the three open permit items, we have one open mechanical item where we're working through the venting of dryers, which is always a challenging issue because dryer venting and dryer lint versus fire code is always a tricky thing to work through. So we're working through that and how to properly rate and vent those systems, which are different than all other air systems in the building. We have a fire protection submittal, which is on its way and should be able to be submitted soon and finalized. And lastly, which is, again, to some degree, the critical path, which is an approval by the MWRD, which is the water management group, of which we're well along the way in that process. So this chart or graph shows that we anticipate being through all of those things by the middle end of May. What has become critical path, independent of the permit, is the removal of the remainder of utilities. Again, same type of challenges working with large utilities companies and getting them to move on a timeline, but we still have Comcast and we still have AT&T to get off the site. We have a backup plan. So Comcast is expected to be off site by mid-May, and we even AT&T by end of the month. We even have a backup plan with AT&T if for some reason they can't get off. We have a backup plan for a temporary location for them to move in the direction of being off the site, but to basically result in the site being available for the next phase of construction by the end of May. That'll move us into excavation, which we have earmarked here in orange, which we anticipate taking a couple of months as we work through clean and dirty soils on the site and managing those for getting ready for construction. We have people tonight, as Jay has said, to speak on retail leasing and residential sales, but we're just highlighting that's been going for some time and will continue through the end of construction. This gray bar is highlighting what I've already talked about is what's led us up to, it specifically notes remediation, but that is the, again, the demo, lost my train of thought, demo, remediation, and
demo.
What I previously outlined. What's that? Utilities, yes. You have comment. Thank you. And then with our goal of starting foundations and vertical structure, the vertical construction as excavation is completed in the first part of August. That being said, I will let Corey come up. I'm sorry, we're going to do Dan Tost first. Is he available?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thanks for joining us. And then when you're done, you can just introduce Corey.
Great, absolutely. I hope everyone can hear me clearly, and thanks for your time tonight. My name is Dan Tosk. I'm with Mid-America Real Estate. We're a retail shopping center specialist in Chicago. You're probably familiar with us from River Forest Town Center and the Oak Park project. We're doing a ton of leasing in the area. I personally have taken a lot of pride in being involved in the Oak Park and River Forest. retail evolution. I brought Trader Joe's to the market many years ago, for many years, as well as I leased River Forest Phase 2 when it was first built with Children's Place and brought Panera in, and at the time it was Linens, now DSW, etc. And then most recently worked with Lincoln Properties at 1133 in the Oak Park project, and we brought Derek Dermatology coming soon, as well as Advent Sleep to that project. So lots of history, but when Sedgwick brought me in here, it's always exciting to get, you know, something that I've been passionate about leasing here, but also the fact that River Forest has amazing demographics. It's pretty attractive to a lot of retailers, as I don't have to tell you. So with that, the retail, we've got, you know, plus or minus 15,000 feet of shops, and they are designed as small shops, but there's a lot of flexibility in the design that I inherited. There's a lot of ways that we can carve out niche, small, true small shop spaces of 11, 1200 feet. There's ways that we could do users in the 2,500, 3,000 foot category. And there's ways that we can combine a couple spaces and get up to 4,000 plus square feet or even bigger if we needed to. So that allows me a lot of flexibility and also the flexibility to lease to the categories that are most active right now. And I thought I'd just kind of run through conceptually some of the categories that we're targeting and talking to at this point, and then can certainly tackle any questions or what have you. So I think if we start with the bigger spaces in the 4,000 foot and up range, right now, that allows me to talk to tenants like Xfinity for a showroom, those technology-like tenants that are coming in, or bicycle stores, or the niche fitness guys like Orange Theory Fitness with the Class Fitness, or even some niche outdoor or running and Uncle Dan's or a New Balance, et cetera. It allows me to talk to some breakfast cafes or upscale wine stores, tasting rooms, maybe some home furnishings, artwork, niche lighting, et cetera. So those would be some of the bigger categories. Some of them we are, you know, a nice neighborhood, strong traffic corner. So it might be some of those tenants might look a little more regionally or to be with Whole Foods. But nevertheless, we'd have a shot based on the proximity and the demographics, et cetera. Then I get into the 2,400 to 3,000 foot spaces. They're a little irregular is the only negative, but they're a really nice size in terms of what's active right now. Some of the examples, there's a lot of what I call MedTail that's leasing space right now. It's not all, a lot of it is family oriented when you get into family dental, eyewear, and eye care, when you get into urgent care or just family practice, et cetera. I'm not talking about dialysis necessarily and things of that nature, but more retail medical. That produces some sales tax along with health and wellness. Additionally, that's right in the niche of all the fast casual concepts that we could shoot for, everything from cafes, bakeries, burgers, Mediterranean that's hot right now, to burritos, to whatever, they're all, everything in that range is in that 2,400 to 3,000 foot range, which is nice. And then finally, the small shop spaces, they're hard to find. I know there's some exist in River Forest and in Oak Park, but they're hard to find when you're looking for 1,000 to 1,200 feet these days. So I do think we'll have, and we already do have a nice audience there, but we're talking about family hair care, ice cream, donuts, nails, subs, sandwiches, cellular, and some niche electronics, things of that nature, you fix it, that type of stuff. And so that would fill in nicely, or those spaces can be combined to create some slightly larger spaces. The hard corner of Lake and Lathrop is the fillet, as I call it, of the 15,000 feet. It's designed at about 2,400 feet. It's designed with a little outdoor seating to really create some energy at the corner. It's got great visibility It's visible to the parking entrance, to a car, et cetera. So that is, I've been, you know, it's, and I agree with it. There's sort of a mandate with Sedgwick that that needs to be our marquee, sexiest, most attractive tenant, for lack of a better phrase, but a nice cafe, bakery concept, something that's really going to draw that traffic and be a great amenity to the community and the residents there, and also be a gathering place, perhaps. Whether it's local or regional in nature, we'd just love to get coffee and ice cream and et cetera on that corner if possible. And then the only really active at this point, we do have one juice, kind of like a Jamba Juice tenant that's looking at one of the smaller spaces. And then we have one active LOI thus far for the western end to the west, which would help us a little bit because it may arguably be our most challenging space. But it's with a family, it's a regional, national actually, veterinarian practice, family pet care, no boarding, no overnight, purely pet care. And so we have an LOI active with that. It'd be a nice national credit tenant as well to help us with the leasing, if we can do that. And then additionally, a little interest next door to them so far from an entity that would be a niche, believe it or not, kind of upscale pet supply, like a Chrysler's Bentley's type tenant. That could be paired with that vet practice if we went in that direction all the way on the west edge of the property. So that's a hot concept is too, pet care. People are spending a ton of money on their pets, and they're also, they want the, this is kind of like the Whole Foods of pet supply is kind of out there right now with organic pet supply and more upscale animal care. So that is a general overview from small to mid-sized small shops and some of the categories that are, you know, that are active coming out of our really inactive 2020, starting to really make deals again, and also categories that I feel are very realistic to lease to and also keep with the very upscale image that we're that the building is designed for, and that you know, that I'm challenged to help provide the right amenities for.
Hey, Dan, this is Katie Brennan. I'm one of the village trustees. I don't know if, when the right time to ask questions is, but you did offer.
Yeah, go ahead, Katie. Yes.
Sure.
You have a question? Yep.
Yeah, great. So you mentioned an LOI or letter of interest for one tenant. Maybe I didn't hear it for the other ones, but can you give us some information about how many contracts you've signed for retail space, or and also letters of interest?
Sure. Yeah. So it really depends if I'm dealing with a local or national tenant. For national tenants, they have a pretty serious process where you first, you know, you got to get them to the site, approve the site. You've got to get their senior management to approve the site. And when you get a letter of intent and you start negotiating it, it's a pretty strong indication that they're ready to do a deal there and open a store, in this case, a veterinary clinic, et cetera. It then goes to there in a national tenant. Once we agree to a letter of intent, it would go to a real estate committee, and that's a, you know, week to 30-day process, and then you start a lease. In this case, we have one actively negotiating letter of intent. So it's not a lease yet. It's a, we're trying to get to that committed letter of intent. It's very rare that you sign a letter of intent and you don't work out a lease. Pretty rare. So that's the other tenants that I mentioned, Smoothies and Pet, Niche Pet Supply. Those are at the stage of, we've had the right people at the site, the right executives at the site that have said we're interested under the right circumstances. Tell us more about the project, you know, not to the point yet of letters of intent, which would indicate they're dead serious about making a deal. But definitely in this environment, just getting those tours done and approvals that you need is pretty big. The other categories are, you know, marketing, and it's really early marketing and conversations. You know, you do need to be with retailers, you need to be in a window of, call it 12 months of deliverability to get their attention in their pipeline, even if they're a local. Locals want to do something yesterday that's available. So I think that's, sorry for the long-winded, but I think it's we've got one deal that we feel has a very good likelihood of making if we do a little further tweaking, and the other, a couple of others that are possible to get to letter of intent quickly. And other than that, we're really targeting those categories strongly, especially coffee.
Thank you very much. I have one follow-up question. I know from having spoken with Marty Paris that there's a certain percentage of the overall residential square footage that needs to be sold to get financing. But I don't know if that also applies to the retail side.
Might be more for Marty and Jay to answer, but I've told them I think I can get, I'm confident that we can get a third of the retail committed in fairly short order, which would be 2 to 3 small shops out of the lineup. And that would certainly be, in my environment, that would be a lot of momentum.
Yeah, and Dan, thanks. This is Jay Feely. And what I would say is that we feel that we're on a really good pace right now with our residential sales, and we think that that alone will be able to secure the financing on the construction loan. But additive to that is anything that we can do with the retail, and retail LOIs are part of that equation. But with all the momentum we have on the residential going, anything that we do on the retail would be additive as far as the construction loan is concerned.
Well, hey, and Jay, if you don't mind me kind of topping that off with a, just for clarification, that in your world, when you're showing your lender that you've got to deal with the retailer, a letter of intent suffices versus a lease, correct?
Yeah, at this stage on new construction, this is not commercial development. This is storefront retail as part of a condo development. So condo development really drives the financing, but this is nice to have with an LO.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just trying to drive the point that lenders understand that how serious letters of intent are.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we're going to transition, Dan, from you to Corey, who's going to handle the residential sales side of this.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. This is Corey Robertson. I'm with Corwin Partners. We're a developer services team, sales and marketing, operating out of Jamison Sotheby's International Realty. I've been here before talking about this project and others in the area, so I'm grateful to be here tonight. So I've been asked to talk a little bit about the overall state of the market, and then speak a little bit more then to where we currently stand in on sales. Anybody that is in River Forest knows right now in the single family housing market is just on absolute fire in River Forest right now. You tend to see a whole lot more buyers out there right now than homes that are hitting the market. And so that's great. But as somebody with, you know, 4 kids in OPRF trying to find a 5-bedroom right now, I can tell you it is absolutely crazy right now in order to get that done. It is very much a knife fight. And that in that 30-day purchase sale closing market, that might be 98% of the market. But our team operates in the 2% that's new construction. And the new construction pre-sale market doesn't operate in the immediacy of how many homes are on the market right now and how many buyers are currently in the market. We don't tip back and forth as often as that. I mean, 10 buyers one way or the other completely changes the marketplace in River Forest, but not in the new construction world. We tend to be a little bit more steady, but we don't swing up and down so much. But because we tend to be on the forefront of needed new product, we tend to be a little steadier overall than the rest of the marketplace. We're not experiencing like the wild insanity that you tend to see right now if you're out trying to buy a house right now in River Forest. Jay had spoken a little bit about this being a one-of-a-kind development. I think I should speak a little bit more to the buyer profile that was attempted to be targeted here. When we did some of our upfront analysis on this project, one of the things that really stood out in the River Forest marketplace was that we were dealing with a community here where the median sales price of a single family home in River Forest is approaching $800,000. And yet there was almost no condominium activity north of $600,000, which to a guy like me would indicate a real opportunity for people who may be shedding 50% of the housing stock, and, you know, say they get kids that go off, what have you, do they have a maintenance-free option to move into to still stay in town? These are people with professional practices, people that own businesses, people that are still very active in the community, but may not need four or five bedrooms anymore because, you know, they've shed some kids. And this is a buyer profile where there's a whole lot of opportunity in, tends to be top of the market in terms of finish expectations. Also a very qualified buyer profile. So it's an easy one for us to go after if we see there's opportunity in that space. And when we looked in River Forest, we clearly saw that. So, you know, we decided to design product that not just had a lot of the features that Jay had spoken of, but to be thinking about, you know, people who would be, you know, who don't need the huge single family home anymore, but who they're still in charge of Thanksgiving. They host family holidays. So they need big kitchens, big living rooms, big dining rooms, and the ability to handle a boomerang kid. And we just didn't see that kind of product sitting in the marketplace, certainly not at the top of the market in River Forest, in the kind of scale which we saw the single family need for that. So we focused in on that. And so we were approaching a new size and a new price range in the overall condo market than what had been achieved before. And that, you know, for most people, that might seem like a fearful thing to go into a new space, new price, new size range. But that's really what we do in the new construction world, is we go after unmet market needs. And now we've identified that type of a buyer profile as needing product. Really recently, our team has worked close. We were the sales and marketing team on a recent project in Oak Park, district house, which was wildly successful, with three bedrooms plus dens, empty nester buyer profile targeted project that sold out before completion. Our team is currently working on a project right now in downtown Elmhurst, called Elmhurst 195. That's still under construction right now. We're 75% sold there and tracking to be done there as well before the building is even completed. And where we stand currently at RF is that we're tracking in the exact same direction with this kind of product where we are given where we are currently in sales. I'll go to the next slide here. So from a pre-sale standpoint, new construction pre-sales, I mean, this is all that our team does. And I'll tell you that selling from floor plans is tough. And it only works if the product that you're hoping to bring to the market actually meets unmet demand in the marketplace. And currently, our project right now is sitting at 32% of the units are pre-sold before the building is even started. That's 32% of the units. I think it's 33 or something percent of the square footage, and probably 35% of the sold dollars. From in my team's world, to be at this number before the building is even started, it's a clear home run. The market is accepting the product. We're in really good shape. All we got to do is get started. You know, we continue to have excitement about RF, our buyer profile, being who they were. You know, your typical empty nester buyer profile has been, you know, perhaps the least likely person who is willing to come out to a sales center for the last 14 months. That's not who comes out and wants to come meet you. So while we've gotten better and better at presentations via Zoom, it's not a substitution for belly-to-belly meetings. And so now that I, forgive me for not knowing the stats right now, but I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 70% of people over the age of 50 are now on some type of path of vaccination. We're starting to now see, for the first time in 14 months, our meeting requests are for people to come on in and talk to us a little bit more about the project in person. This is when we're most successful. And so it's just in literally, this has been in the last, call it 30 days. There's been a huge shift in requests for Zooms versus requests from come on in and can we talk about the project and walk and talk it and really tell you what it is that we're looking to do. That's where we stand that's my understanding of the marketplace today and where we currently stand on sales. I know that Phyllis Rubin added the question regarding the number of sales that may be related to the development. I can speak to that and say that while, you know, I'm an Oak Parker, don't judge, and some of the other principals in the project are also from the area, We do know people that have come and visited the project, but up until now, none of our current sales are personnel that are involved in the project or immediate family members of anybody that has that's involved in the project. So all the sales that we're currently referencing, we would consider arm's length transactions. I hope that goes to speak to her question. And if there's any more, I'm happy to take them.
Well, there's one that came into the chat. It just said, how many units are in the building totally?
Total are 22.
Okay.
And so how many units have been sold?
There are six contracts that are through attorney review, and then we have a seventh right now that is actively in attorney review.
Okay, so sounds like seven.
Yeah.
Okay, and the question came, does 32% include the one pending contract that Lisa Shiner mentioned?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Okay, did you answer both Phyllis's question? It's regarding the number that would be required for you to break ground. Requirement. Her number. Her
forgive me. I think Jay will probably have to take that question. I don't know exactly.
So as Corey said, we're at 32% on the pre-sale. We are very engaged with the construction lending community. To just add a little background to that, I closed on a construction financing for a project that we're doing in Chicago and River North. That's twice the size of this project as far as total dollars, and we're at 40% when we closed on that. So as Corey mentioned, there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of excitement, and we are right on the precipice of being able to put that in place.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like it doesn't appear to be a number that puts you in a requirement.
It's generally a number tied to a percentage. In this case, 40%, which would be, we're at seven contracts now. I feel very comfortable that if we have nine contracts, then we're moving forward with that. Those conversations are all ongoing right now. We're very active with that. And we're very much in line to get that in place.
So there might be a clarification here from Judith, which I can understand the miscommunication, but the building will have 22 elevators plus maybe a service elevator. I don't think that's what you're talking about, elevators to each, because they're going to have four banks of elevators. You might want to explain the elevator situation, because it's confusing to some.
Sure, not 22 elevators.
No, I know that.
No, it's not 22 elevators. There are four elevators that service two sides, and so now there's eight units per floor on the first two floors, and then there's six on the top floor that gets you to the 22. But the elevators will service. The doors will go up and they'll open to two different sides, you know, depending on the button that somebody has, if you have the fob for that unit. So this is a feature of the top end of the marketplace today. Even pre-COVID, there was a shift in the marketplace from top of the market used to be, you know, a great big huge, you know, tower downtown with jillions of amenities and a whole bunch of door people and all that sort of stuff. And that was the top of the marketplace. And even pre-COVID, that was flipping to these boutique mid-rises where there were these semi-private elevators, where elevators would open directly into vestibules into the units with less common space and fewer expenses that were shared throughout all the units. And we were following through on that shift. And now post-COVID, oh, I tell you what, I mean, like the high rises in downtown are really struggling with that. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. I know there's a few coming here about IEPA. I know we talked about the IEPA, so I'm going to give it, I don't know who your IEPA expert here or remediation expert. Again, this is for Margie. Cedric applied to the IEPA to obtain approval to proceed with development status of IEP approval. Now, I know you talked about it. Why don't you say it again?
Just recap it?
Just recap it.
Okay. Yeah, so we've been through the remediation process through our engineer and the IEPA, of which we have a report that I believe has been posted, and we have their approval to proceed with construction. But there is ultimately a final step, as mentioned, that will be to get the no further remediation, which comes with the integration of the building to the site. It basically creates a barrier separating the building from the soil and actually vents any potential gases from that soil up and out through the building, so it's safe for anybody living there. So that is ultimately the final step. But we have the approval essentially as we need to begin construction.
So Mark, let me just add to that. I mean, you know, again, this is not your first time you're going through a remediation process. I'm guessing that Sedgwick has done several projects in the city or elsewhere where you remediated. IEPA, the NFR letter, at least to the best of my knowledge, that I've read and learned, is that this is a normal process, that the NFR normally comes at the end of construction.
Yes,
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think the residents need to hear that, because it's a bit confusing. And until you really do the reading on it and start looking at different remediation projects, both in the city and in elsewhere, you do find that that's a common theme.
Right. I would just differentiate this as the first dry cleaning contaminated site. We've had more gas stations, but at the end of the day, we've still done that engineered barrier to obtain the NFR letter, as we are doing here.
Can I ask a question around that? This is Erica Bachner, trustee. So is the remediation that has been completed, should there ever be any other kind of development here where, you know, this is taken down for one reason or another? Is the remediation complete for the entire space, or is it just in line with this project?
The treatment that has been done, and though I may have to ultimately defer to the engineer to know how that might filtrate the benefit beyond the site, but the treatment that's been done is on the site proper.
For the site,
for the development.
So for this development, not the full parcel?
No, for the entire, the development essentially takes up the entire parcel. So yes, the whole footprint of the site for this development has met the remediation requirements.
But for the purposes of this project. Her question is, if the building was torn down, would the next developer need to do additional remediation, say if they were going to dig in the ground, if they were to go?
They may have to replace the barrier, and assuming there's not a dry cleaner, then we have that issue. But no, as is, it shouldn't, if there's no future remediation done, to my understanding, other than what's been done and maintaining that barrier. That would be part of the infrastructure of the next building.
All right. Okay. Any further questions from the trustees? We got a couple
more comment than a question. You guys need to be better neighbors. We've had a number of your close-in neighbors that have complained about debris on the sites. I can remember either this year or last year during a snowstorm that the site wasn't shoveled for a number of days. I think at the end of the day, the village actually shoveled your site. We've been really good partners with you, and I'm not sure that you've reciprocated all that much. And so that's just a warning for me. Well, not a warning because I'm off the board, but you really do need to consider this more importantly than I think you do. Because again, I hate these masks. Your close neighbors have complained often about the debris. I've seen the debris. The snow really angered me, to be honest with you, because we could have fined you. I mean, you have an obligation as a property owner to clean your sidewalks. And so please bear that in mind as we continue down this process, that you have an obligation to the village to maintain the property. I know it's under construction, but bear in mind that people live around here. It's a small place. And so you have tight neighbors. Please keep them in consideration when you do your construction plans.
No, appreciate that. I think we've been better about keeping the site signage in tighter and better condition. We have hired a company to actually keep an eye on the site for the purposes of the snow and the buildup, and we'll be sure to take a closer look at debris and weeds and things that will grow that are the summertime issues that we need to keep clean.
Thank you, Tom, because that is an issue, and Lisa and I have chatted about it. You know, we will do what we need to do to ensure that our neighbors are cared for. Just so you know. Okay. So there's a few questions here regarding project timetable. you know, which is currently within the talking about our contract, and we need to be very careful. So I'm going to, there's a few questions here regarding the contractual obligation of the date. And I just want to make sure that we, you know, the village is, you know, keeps all of our, the ability to do what we need to do in the future. So I don't know if you want to address that.
Correct. Yeah, I just would caution the board to not engage in too much back and forth about, you know, your ideas about what you, how you think the timeline should be extended going forward. If there's questions to the developer about their plans and how they fit within the timelines, I believe there's some comments that the public has posed that President Ducey is referencing. If she thinks those are appropriate, she can ask those. But I don't think we should engage in any negotiations with the developer in open session, especially where the village's legal rights may be implicated. That's if, you know, being your attorney, that's my advice to you. So.
Okay, very good. Okay, so, well, there is a question, which I think is just an open question, and that is, well, let's see what we got here. Just want to make sure. Okay, so deliverability within 12 months is needed for retail leases. By contract, project must be complete by November 21. Again, I think the bigger question is how long do you think the project will be? How long do you think it will take to complete the project from beginning of a construction
period?
Or a permit, actually, I guess.
From permit issuance or from foundations. And again, the excavation is a little bit of a back step before you go forward with construction. But we've earmarked 16 months for the construction of the building.
And can I just ask, because I wasn't quite clear on the permitting question, some of the permitting that Mark talked about?
Mm-hmm.
Three permits that I think are holding up or that need to happen before construction starts, the mechanical, the fire, and the MWRD?
There's one open mechanical comment, which I'd like to think we're close to resolving. The contractor is putting together a fire submittal that has to come from a subcontractor submittal that the person doing the work will be putting together. So that's why that's taking a little bit extra time. And then those two are relatively within our proximity of control. The one a little bit less is the MWRD, but we've already been through two rounds of comments on that and have been back into them as of a few days ago. And we've got a follow-up communication with the civil engineer to get an update on that timeline. But in touching base with him after that last round of comments, he felt confident that mid-end of May was reasonable to get the MWRD approval.
And so just to piggyback on what Katie said, though, so it sounds like the other two, the mechanical permit and all the other permitting will be done before that?
The timeline, we've earmarked that to be done through the month of May.
And then the utility... I'm sorry.
No. I was just talking about the other permits they need from us, Katie. So
yep.
Lisa was just going to make a comment.
Yeah. So we've been working with the developer to address any outstanding permit issues. They are making significant progress. Yeah, there are two final pieces of information that we need in order to close that out, and they are getting very close to that. And also, yeah, as they mentioned, they need the permit from the MWRD. I agree with Mark that they have made significant headway and they've gone through two rounds of comments. Both Sedgwick and the MWRD have been extremely responsive and timely in their submittals and their return of comments in that process.
Okay, so that's end of May for those three permitting issues. And then there were two utility issues and we're looking at end of May to have those resolved as well?
As well, on a parallel track. Comcast, which we think will be a little bit ahead on that to more of like a mid-May, and then AT&T end of May, and then we even have a backup plan with AT&T if they're not moving effectively, we have the ability for them to do a temp service but move it off to the edge of the site while they're doing their rerouting. Again, all three of these utilities were feeding properties outside of our property, which was, you know, fundamentally the challenge. It wasn't just about removing it from our site, but it was about removing and rerouting for it to maintain the service beyond our site.
So what else?
Yeah, go ahead. Katie, go ahead.
What else has to happen aside from permitting issues and utilities that we think are all going to be finished by the end of May for you to break ground?
Well, the next step in there is excavation. which we can proceed on, but then for the vertical construction, we would need to finalize that construction loan. But the excavation provides a nice bridge between the permitting utilities and the actual physical construction.
Now, I want to remind the residents and the village and all the trustees that the permitting cost to them is not insignificant, both for the, from the village and from the water reclamation district. So once you, you know, we commit to our permit, so not an insignificant amount of money.
That
right?
is true.
Yeah, you're pot committed at that point.
We're committed. So,
and
all
how
right.
then, I'm sorry, so is it after excavation that the 16 months would then begin for the construction?
Yes.
How long does that, would the excavation take?
We've earmarked a couple of months. It may not quite take that long, but again, we want to give the guys time to manage the soil, because again, we have a combination of clean and semi-contaminated soil, again, all of it at the proper levels, but each degree of soil has to go to different sites. So there's just some management. And even though some of the soil is contaminated, it's still reusable in many respects. So underneath our slabs and certain portions of the building, we can use that. So there's just a fair amount of, not just moving of soil, but also managing it so we can just be efficient with it.
So we're looking at June 1st to July 31st for excavation?
Yep. And then on the timeline, we had earmarked August 1 as a construction start.
And you have the financing for the excavation, so that's not an issue before you can start excavation?
Correct.
So while you're doing excavation... Sorry, Kathy.
No, no,
while you're doing... While you're doing the excavation, are you going to be obtaining the financing for the vertical construction?
Yes, it's ongoing now, and we'll continue through that part of the
well
process.
Well, in process right now.
So, you need to get to the mic.
Sorry, the financing is well in process right now, actually. So we've actually been after it for a few months now, and we'll continue it until we close on the loan.
Do you have an estimated... time? I know it's not completely in your control.
An estimated timeline on the closing of the financing?
Yes.
Is that what you're asking? We expect it to close in conjunction with the vertical construction portion with the foundations.
No,
yeah.
You mean excavation?
August 1. Yep.
August 1, and we had a lot of people talking. Could you repeat that? So
the financing is anticipated to be closed by August 1st, in line with the vertical construction, which includes the foundations.
Okay.
There was one other question, and that was, what is the obligation, the down payment that has to be made for the 6-7 contracts that are already in place?
What is their earnest money? Is that what you mean? What are they committing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 10%.
And then we have a question here. Can you set up a schedule for updates going forward?
Oh, absolutely.
So we should establish that.
I would ask that since we've got some, there's a lot of movement that's going to be happening in the next few months, could we ask for a monthly update?
Absolutely. I agree.
And I would like to have a copy of your deck. Your slide deck. Can you... Could you?
No. This presentation can be made available. We'll be happy to do that. Information about the units themselves, floor plans, floor plates, all that are available, or even e-brochures are available through Corey or at the sales center itself. So there's a lot more information that's available. for the public that can is available today. So we're happy to share any of that information.
Great. Okay. Yeah, I would think so. And again, I want to remind the residents and the trustees that, you know, as we start looking, you know, this any actions going forward will be taken up on the new board in May or June. So we'll certainly have another round of conversation regarding this. So we look forward to our constant updates. Okay. Is there any further questions from any of the trustees? Hearing none, I will go ahead and say thank you to our guests, and we appreciate you being here and giving us an update. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, on behalf of Cedric and our entire team, thank you for hosting us tonight.
You're welcome. Enjoy your evening. All right. So moving on to new business. And so we're going to talk about our the ordinance adopting the annual budget. Thank you. If I can get a motion to improve the annual budget in a second, and we can talk more about it. We got Rosie and Lisa and everyone here. So can I get a motion in a second, please?
I move to approve an ordinance adopting the annual budget for the fiscal year commencing on the first day of May 2021 and ending on the 30th day of April 2022 for the Village of River Forest, Illinois.
Second.
Okay, is there any further questions to Rosie and or Lisa? Is there anything, Lisa or Rosie, you want to add?
Just a real quick comment. We appreciate the questions that were presented by members of the public, and I had a conversation with the village trustee after the hearing. We always welcome comments and questions from the public. The budget is one of the most important things we do. It represents our plan for the coming year, and it's how we pay and spend your tax dollars and how we meet the needs of this community. And so I had provided a response to as many of the questions as we could get our arms around and that we could pull from the meeting and provided that in a memo to the board. So that is attached to the board packet if anybody would like to review that. Again, we always appreciate that. If there's anybody who has any further questions or wishes to discuss it, you know where to find me. We are pleased to present a balanced budget to you and appreciate the board's support of that budget. And I appreciate all the effort of staff in pulling that together. It is a monumental undertaking.
Yes, I agree. And as I said earlier, I don't think we all appreciate not only the work that goes behind it, but all the added meetings and conversations and things of that nature that I know Rosie and her staff and Lisa and your staff do on a day-to-day basis. It's just not amongst ourselves. It's with state and federal and other agencies and other people that affect our budget. So I know how much work that is. It's a daily effort. So I appreciate it. I really do. Hearing any further comments from our trustees, I will ask now the clerk to please take the vote on our annual budget, which is balanced.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Kargi?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay. The next item is basically direction to our staff from us. Although this was a discussion we had nearly a year ago, but it's here and it's before us, and it's regarding a village, overall village flagpole policy that I hope we can adopt. So I'll let Lisa go ahead and explain it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So actually, I'm going to give this to Sarah. She's really been quarterbacking this initiative for us. And so, Sarah Pfeiffer, if you could discuss the memo that you wrote with the board.
Good evening, everyone. So you may recall last summer, staff was asked to look into creating a flag policy after Trustee Packner requested to fly the rainbow flag during LGBTQ plus Pride Month, and staff worked with the village attorney to prepare the recommendation before you this evening. So here the First Amendment public forum doctrine, the flagpole is considered a non-public forum.
And just reading from the memo here, a non-public forum is a location where government can restrict access to properties so long as the restrictions are reasonable and not an effort to suppress expression just because public officials oppose the view. So in order to maintain the flagpole as a non-public forum, but to allow certain honorary flags to be flown, the village board can pass commemorative resolution contain language directing staff to fly a specific flag. So this would avoid the village being forced to fly flags that may not align with the village's public policy goals and messaging, and would not affect the flagpole as a non-public forum or violate each requirement. Additionally, staff would recommend filtering these types of requests through a trustee speaker, which help limit requests from individuals or organizations holding views that village officials may not agree with. So thank you to Trustee Bachner for providing the sample policy from Pittsburgh, California, that's attached to the memo. So this is a great example of what staff prepared in terms of flagpole display policy for your consideration at a future meeting if the board agrees with its approach.
Yeah, I think it's a very reasonable approach. If anybody has any comments regarding it, I think it certainly accomplishes what we want as a body, is to make sure that we have a say, or we welcome others other point of views and other organizations. But I think we ought to be able to vote on it. So anybody, go ahead.
No, this is Russ. I just
Go ahead.
This is more of a question, I guess, is number one, if we do pass a commemorative flag or a resolution, do we have to do that on an annual basis? And let me be more specific. For example, if it's the Pride Month, do we have to approve that every year for the Pride Month to post or to fly the flag, the Pride flag? Or do we have to, or can we do it once and saying every year thereafter, We're acknowledging this as a commemorative event, and therefore we can fly the flag for the 30 days in June. I'm just using that for an example. And then I have another question after that.
I think the answer is yes, but I'll go ahead and have it
right. It's a matter of policy, Trustee Vasquez, but I think the better policy would be to have it adopted each year, so that as these resolutions commemorating Pride Month, let's say, come forward, that the board each year is acting on that in the ordinary course currently. So it would just be built into that annual approval. It would also reaffirm the board's commitment to these concepts on an annual basis.
And that would be fine with me. My other question, though, is probably directed for you, Greg. If the board approves a lot of these commemorative resolutions, do we, and this is a question, do we ever risk of changing this from a commemorative position and turning it into a public forum if we have too many of these, or as long as we pass a resolution, a commemorative resolution, that pretty much will secure no matter how many times we do it?
It's the latter. The government speech doctrine provides that you don't convert your flagpole into a public forum where people can tell you the flags to put up there if the legislative body of the village president and board of trustees, adopts these requirements each and every time. So as long as we follow that routine, it will not become a public forum.
Okay, thank you for that. And I'm fine with moving, and this is the other homekeeping issue. This is a draft of another city's policy, and thank you, Trustee Bachner, for finding it. But we're not voting today for it, right? We're going to make one that's more applicable for River Forest, and then we vote on that, I'm assuming, the next month.
Yeah. So okay. The hope is just to kind of give direction to the staff.
Okay.
If this is something you like, then Sarah mentioned she'll bring it back.
Okay. I'm fine with it.
Now, is that what the new?
Well, we can talk about that.
Okay.
And how we want to structure the board meeting on May 10th.
Okay. All right. We'll figure that out.
Okay.
Tom, I'd like to go through zoning law in detail with you.
All right.
Any other questions regarding this direction? So,
not a question, just thank you, Sarah, and the village staff for working through this. And I think I did provide to you, Kathy, a Pride Progress flag that so many towns and cities are now using. So to be inclusive.
So, yep, all good. Yeah, I thank you for that. And I think this is good. I'm excited for our flag policy and all what we can do here. All right, so it sounds like you've got direction to go ahead and make it a true policy and bring it back to the board for a vote. And then hopefully we can fly the Pride flag in June. So, okay, any other questions? We have no executive session, so I guess I'd ask for an adjournment.
Make a motion to adjourn. Go ahead, Tom.
I'll move to adjourn.
That was a lot of motion.
Yeah.
Okay. At 9:15. So, Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Kargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Meeting adjourned. Okay, good night, everyone. Thank you for joining us.